Hello, this is Jean with the News Gazette, dated July 10th, 2025. We will begin today's readings on the front page with the article entitled Champaign County Courts, Additional Charges Filed Against Suspect in Road Rage Incident Crash by Luke Taylor of the News Gazette. An Urbana man who was arrested after allegedly firing a gun in a road rage incident in North Champaign, then fleeing from a traffic stop and getting into a crash in Urbana, made his first court appearance Wednesday. James E. White, 62, was initially arrested on charges of aggravated discharge of a firearm, aggravated fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer, and driving under the influence of alcohol. At Wednesday's court appearance, two new charges, both Class X felonies, were added: possession of a firearm by a repeat felony offender and armed violence. Champaign police said officers were initially dispatched at 2:59 p.m. Tuesday to the area of Bloomington Road and North Prospect Avenue in Champaign and learned that a driver had pointed and fired a gun at someone, but no one had been hit. Officers identified the vehicle's route and located it at Green and First Streets in Campustown, where they initiated a traffic stop, but it fled. At 3:07 p.m., it was involved in a crash with multiple other vehicles at the intersection of Green and Lincoln Avenue. White, whom police identified as the driver of the vehicle that fled, and an occupant of one of the vehicles that was hit were both taken to an area hospital with minor injuries. After being evaluated, White was arrested. A traffic case initially filed against him was dismissed Wednesday in favor of the felony charges. State's attorney Julia Reitz said possession of a firearm by a repeat felony offender is the new name for a charge formerly known as armed habitual criminal. It was one of the multiple charges that were changed by the legislature in House Bill 4500, which took effect at the beginning of this year, with the intent of clarifying confusing titles. Others, such as unlawful use of a weapon, were updated to unlawful possession of a weapon, as in many cases it was misleading for defendants who didn't use the weapon in question. White was charged with possession of a firearm by a repeat felony offender due to his record, which includes 12 prior convictions between 1981 and 2015. Two of those charges, obstruction of justice and possession of a concealed weapon, occurred in Florida. The remaining occurred in Cook County, including attempted robbery, manufacture and delivery of a look-alike substance, soliciting prostitution, and multiple counts of theft and a DUI-related crime. The next article is entitled, No More Room on This Student's Plate. Heritage High senior-to-be maintaining high GPA while playing four sports and umpiring by Bob Asmussen. If it's Tuesday, Rylan White is likely umpiring a baseball game or playing one of his own. The Heritage High School's senior-to-be has a full well plate this summer. He is pitching, playing third base for the Tuscola American Legion team, umpiring games in his hometown, and also getting ready for a four-sport final year with the Hawks. Heritage doesn't have football, which would be in the 6'1", 210-pounder's wheelhouse, so White is in golf, basketball, track and field, and, of course, baseball. He is a pitcher and shortstop for the Hawks. White likes to play golf with his dad, Heritage principal Corey White. Rylan also helps out with the Heritage Future Farmers of America chapter. He is president. When Rylan has free time, the country music fan listens to his favorites while driving around with his friends. All the extracurriculars are wreaking havoc with his academics, right? Hardly. His grade point average is 4.03. The school part is amazing, White said. All my teachers work with me really well. I like to stay on top of things. I am not a big procrastinator. There's no time to be one. Fortunately, White has plenty of help, starting with his parents, Mom, Sean, and Dad, Corey. His siblings are younger brother Caden White, older brother Austin Townsend, and older sister Tegan Townsend. Rylan is quick to thank his coaches who make his overloaded schedule work. Golf, Griffin Boyer and Doug Boyer, basketball, Corey White and Tim Wilson, baseball, Andy Charles and Doug Kirkwood, and track and field, Brad Wilson. I wouldn't be able to do any of this without their support and letting me do what I love, Rylan says. There is a lot to keep track of. White goes old school, writing all of his upcoming events on a daily planner. Keeping busy. White played a doubleheader Sunday with the Tuscola Post 27 American Legion team. They split the games with White getting two hits. He pitched two scoreless innings with four strikeouts. White earned News Gazette's All-Area Honorable Mention in the most recent season. This summer he plays in a wood bat league for the Urbana Park District. When he isn't playing, Rylan is umpiring. He works two or three games a week in the area. The gig started for him when he was in the seventh grade. His mom ran the Homer Youth League and needed umpires. She started me off with the little kids, Rylan said. When the IHSA began allowing 15 to 16-year-olds to become umpires, Rylan was all in. I was like, perfect, White said. I am a four-sport athlete. I don't have time to get a job. I can plan when I want to do games. It's decent money for me, and it keeps me involved with the game. I've always had a love for baseball. How is he doing as an umpire? So far, so good. Everybody's been pretty nice and chill, White said. At the end of the day, it's just a game for everyone. I think people are starting to realize that one side is going to be mad at you and one side is going to be very happy, depending upon how it goes. White's friends give him a good-natured hard time about his umpiring. They'll stand right on the fence where I am at and yell, "That's a terrible call," White said. Last year at a Pony League championship, he called a balk on friend Lane Sexton. White describes himself as confident and loud on the field. I make sure people know what my calls are, White said. As he mentioned, the money comes in handy. He earns $60 to $80 per game, enough to keep the tank full in his Ford Fusion. Now 17, he turns 18 in January, White usually works junior high school level baseball. I've tried to do high school, but it's so hard with my schedule, he said. Future plans. After he graduates from Heritage in the spring, White will attend a to-be-determined college. He wants to play baseball and earn a degree in sports management with an eye towards coaching or becoming an athletic director. What college? I'm up in the air on that, White said. Baseball is going to play a big part in it. He has an offer to play from Blackburn College in Carlinville. White will consider his options as the selection time draws closer. His future includes giving back. Youth and high school sports are facing a shortage of game officials. White wants to do his part. I'm definitely going to continue after college, White said. How about umpiring in the majors? The lifelong St. Louis Cardinals fan admires the folks calling balls and strikes. Anytime I go to a game, I'm always watching the umpires, where they're standing and what signals they're making, he says. Those guys do a great job. That's 95 miles per hour coming at your face. White is protected at the games by equipment his grandparents gave him when he began umpiring. He has been banged up. I expect to get hit by a foul ball or a pitch at least once every game. A Okay, the last front page article is entitled A Classic Restored, Vintage Equipment Lines, Caboose Featured at Show by Dave Hinton. At 80 years old, retired farmer Kenny Coker is selling off his vintage Oliver tractors. The Thomasboro resident who farmed in southern Illinois said at one time he owned seven of the vintage green tractors, which were no longer manufactured after 1976. His ownership total is now down to three. "I'm getting up there in age where it's time to get rid of them," Coker said. "They were good, dependable tractors. They were quiet, too. They ran smooth, unlike the John Deere, Johnny Poppers of the day." Oliver was one of the first brands to offer a live power takeoff, which allows the power takeoff shaft to operate independently of the tractor's transmission. Oliver is one of three major farm implement brands that are being featured at this year's Historic Farm Days show at Penfield, hosted by the I&I Antique Tractor and Gas Engine Club. The show runs today through Sunday. Farm equipment from White, which bought out Oliver and Cockshut, primarily manufactured in Canada, are also featured lines at this year's show. One of the notable Cockshut pieces is a rare pull-behind combine. Cocker brought one Oliver tractor to the showgrounds and has a large Oliver toy display in the feature tent. "I used to check plant corn on the Half Century of Progress showgrounds in Rantoul," Cocker said, "and the toy display is patterned after that." Check planting was a vintage method used before herbicides were introduced. It featured crop rows planted in a checkerboard pattern in the field. Farmers were able to cultivate the crops north-south and east-west. I&I Club member Russell Burr said that there were a number of Oliver dealers in this area. "Dillavu was the Oliver dealership in Champaign," Burr said. "Then they moved over to Mayview between Urbana and St. Joe." Oliver equipment was made in Charles City, Iowa, in Shelbyville. Show visitors will also be able to tour a Missouri Pacific Railroad caboose purchased last year by the I&I Club. The caboose, which had been sitting on a siding near a grain elevator at Riley, was purchased by the club at auction from the Wheeler estate and was moved to the showgrounds in 2024, but was not open to the public last year. "Our club members were very instrumental in seeing that it got there," club member John Fredrickson said. "A concrete pad was poured to set the rails in for a good foundation for the caboose. The club recently installed a fence around it. It does have a wooden stairway at each end so people that are interested in can go up the stairs and walk through the caboose," Fredrickson said. "The exterior, considering its age, the paint is a little faded, but other than that, the exterior is very good." Another notable piece on display is a Hart Parr No. 3 tractor on loan from the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. The tractor, the oldest surviving internal combustion engine tractor in the country, will be displayed in the museum. We have several obituaries today. Shirley Adams, 86, died Tuesday, July 8, 2025, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Morgan Memorial Home in Regency and Savoy. Roosevelt J. Davis, 87, of Danville, died Monday, June 11, 2025, at the VA Ileana Healthcare System in Danville. Visitation will be at 2 p.m. Saturday at Second Christ Church, 3350 East 4E Street in Danville. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at 3 p.m. Saturday at the church. Nancy Hasley is 85 of Wheaton, formerly of Urbana, died at 7:56 a.m. Tuesday, July 8, 2025, at Brighton Gardens of Wheaton. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, 708 West Main Street. Mary Holverson, 78, died at 4:39 p.m. Sunday, July 6, 2025, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Celebration of Life will be at 10:30 a.m. August 2nd at Harvest Church, 2118 Cindy Lynn Street in Urbana. Bear Family Funeral Services is in charge of the arrangements. David John Lowry, 67, of Danville, passed away at 5:43 a.m. Monday, July 7, 2025, at home. The burial for David will be at 10 a.m. Monday, July 14th, at St. Paul Catholic Church in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Christian Sloger Lowry, care of Greg Rolaninke, to help cover medical expenses. Anna Mae Weaver, 96, of Westville, passed away at 10:50 p.m. Monday, July 7th, at Goldwater Care in Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, July 14th, at Robinson Chapel, Catlin, with Chris Lawler officiating. Burial will be in Mount Vernon Cemetery, west of Catlin. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Monday, July 14, at Robinson Chapel. Okay, continuing with some news on the Texas flash floods. Article entitled, Searchers Toll. Focus on First Responders' Mental Health Grows as More Bodies Recovered, by Ben Finley and Nadia Lathan of the Associated Press. Riding on horseback through brush and over numerous dead turkeys, Margot Mellon spent Tuesday scanning the flood-ravaged grounds of Texas's hill country for dead bodies. As she and her rescue mates trudged through the muddy terrain, state officials announced that more than 160 people are still believed to be missing. With countless miles swamped by the floods, nobody knows when the searches will end. The triumphs of finding people alive ended days ago, while the mission of recovering bodies that might include even more children is far from over. The grim undertaking has prompted questions about how first responders and rescue teams are able to mentally reckon with the work ahead. Mellon, a 24-year-old volunteer with search and recovery organization Texas EquiSearch, which is working with the area fire departments, said for now she feels emotionally detached as she focuses on the task, but she knows the experience will be difficult to process once she returns home to Corpus Christi. I'll try not to think about it too much, she said. I'll just think about the fact that at least the families have closure. The flash floods deluged homes, campgrounds, and an all-girls summer camp over the 4th of July weekend. More than 100 people have been killed, including 30 children. We process it the best we can, Lieutenant Colonel Ben Baker of the Texas Game Wardens said Tuesday at a news conference after taking a deep breath. We're making sure they have the support, Baker said of the search teams, adding that to see a child in that loss of life is extremely tragic. Working on autopilot. As the search for bodies continued Wednesday, teams zeroed in on a piles of debris that created a bottleneck along the receding Guadalupe River. Police and firefighters worked with local construction companies whose excavators and skid loaders pulled away downed trees, vehicles, and remnants of homes. We have spotters on the ground, Captain Jason Waldrop of the Kerr County Sheriff's Office said during a Wednesday news conference. So as this material is being removed, we are looking for anything of a sign of a person that may be within this material. Jonathan Lamb, a community services officer with Kerrville Police, asked residents to let search parties check their properties before cleaning up because it's possible there are victims in that debris pile. The discussion about first responders' mental health likely wouldn't have occurred a generation ago, experts say. And while first responders have higher rates of post-traumatic stress disorder and other psychological health conditions, most are able to process the heavy realities of the job. Nick Colota, who was a paramedic in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina in 2005, said people in the profession are able to compartmentalize and work on autopilot. Despite the challenges of recovering bodies, he said the work is crucial. It's definitely not the goal that you are hoping for, he said, but just being able to give someone closure that their loved one was found can be a sense of accomplishment. There are still people unaccounted for from Katrina. Mental health challenges may follow, he said, which is why learning how to rest and get support is important. People will still continue to call the police. People will still get sick. Things will still catch fire, he said. What's really important is understanding your limitations and having resources available to use, whether it be an anonymous helpline or a sit-down with a mental health counselor. The importance of a strong support system. The stresses of the job affect everyone differently, said Robin Jakubowicz, interim director of the Institute for Disaster Mental Health at State University of New York in New Paltz. A lot of it depends on what the first responders experienced previously, both on the job and off, she said. For these responders who are working in Texas, it's probably not their first incident, says Jakubowicz, who co-authored a report on the mental health needs of New York's first responders. So what they're dealing with now is probably layered on top of what they have dealt with in the past, and those things add up. Stress from the job can show up through sleeplessness, flashbacks, or introversion, Jakubowicz said, as well as feelings of, could I have done more? Did I do enough? Most will lean on friends and families, as well as clergy or spiritual advisors. But because many don't want to burden them with what they've seen, they also lean on each other and mental health professionals. One of the biggest predictors of recovering from a traumatic event is the degree of social support a person has. Not every traumatic incident turns into a full-blown PTSD, Jakubowicz said. You may struggle with PTSD-like symptoms and then be able to work through them. A growing emphasis on mental health. There has been a marked shift towards acknowledging the mental health challenges of the job, said Ian Stanley, a University of Colorado emergency medicine professor. Much of the change has occurred in the last decade, pushed along by the growing focus on PTSD among veterans, coupled with the stressors of the COVID-19 pandemic on first responders, Stanley said. But there's still a long way to go because the issue hasn't been talked about for so long, he said. Challenges include serving first responders who work for volunteer organizations or in rural areas where there are fewer mental health resources. The issue also hasn't been studied as extensively as it has among veterans and service members. Stanley stressed that most first responders are resilient to these challenges and live happy, healthy, productive, resilient lives. But he noted that many of those recovering flood victims in Texas are in small communities. They might be recovering bodies of people they know or their neighbors, he said, and that's really challenging. And the last article for this half hour involves the One Big Beautiful Act, food assistance changes threaten benefits for thousands. New requirements mandate that states pays for a greater share of the program, by Ben Zelensky. Hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans could lose benefits from a federal food assistance program, while the state will be required to cover more costs under changes passed in the latest domestic policy bill. President Donald Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act into law on July 4th, making sweeping changes to social services programs, including Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP or food stamps. The bill institutes new work requirements for many people to remain eligible for benefits and shifts some costs for the program to the states. Food stamps were first established in the 1930s during the Great Depression and renamed to SNAP in 2008. The program provides monthly stipends for low-income Americans to buy select foods at grocery stores. While states implement the program and pay a portion of administrative expenses, the federal government has historically covered the cost of the benefits. Under the law, work requirements to qualify for SNAP benefits have been expanded to include people up to the age of 64, along with homeless people, veterans, and young adults leaving foster care. Previously, only people age 18 through 54 had to meet work requirements. Those populations didn't previously have to prove they were doing a certain amount of work, but when the changes kick in, they will have to do 80 hours of paid, unpaid, or volunteer work each month to qualify for benefits, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The law continues to provide exemptions for people who are physically unable to work, such as those who are pregnant. The changes could leave 360,000 people in Illinois at risk of losing eligibility, according to the state. Trump and Republicans would rather children go hungry so their friends can receive tax cuts, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. Here in Illinois, we have been working to combat food insecurity for years, and while no state can backfill these costs, the state of Illinois will continue to fight against these harmful impacts and stand up for working families. About 1.9 million people are using SNAP in Illinois as of March, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. New costs for the state. Illinois and most other states will have to cover a greater portion of costs for SNAP under the law, including those based on the state's error rate of over- and underpayment on benefits. Beginning in federal fiscal year 2028, which begins in October 2027, the law requires states with an error rate greater than 10% as of at least FY25 to cover 15% of the cost of benefits. States with lower error rates would cover a smaller portion of the benefits. Illinois recorded an 11% error rate in FY24, according to the USDA. More than 1.8 million Illinoisans receive $4.7 billion in SNAP benefits in FY25, according to the state. If Illinois must pay 15% of the cost of benefits, it could leave the state on the hook for $705 million, or about 1.3% of the current budget. Also beginning in federal fiscal year 2027, which begins in October of 2026, states will have to cover 75% of administrative costs for SNAP, up from 50%. This year's state budget appropriates $60 million for administrative costs for SNAP, up $20 million from last year. The changes are part of initiatives by congressional Republicans and the Trump administration to shift more of the responsibility for assistance programs to state. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates changes to SNAP will reduce the federal spending by $279 billion over 10 years, but increase state spending on SNAP by $121 billion over the same time. Pritzker and 22 other governors sent a letter to Congress last month saying it's possible that states will have to leave the program or reduce benefits because of the new cost requirements. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, July 10th, 2025. Please stay tuned.